Blog Talk Radio.
You'll be listening to Box Set here on GoldBoxMedia.com with your host.
But the laws of physics no longer apply in the future. God help you.
The oh-so sexy cat.
Oh, my breath, they're really strong.
And the almighty bad.
It's simple. Just take the hydraulic phase shift emulator and attach it to the transdimensional photon particle emitter. Kaboom! New talent.
From somewhere deep in space, in an unknown location, in a meteor far, far away in the other side of a galaxy, orbiting some random orbital space station in space, this is Boxheads here on CodeBoxMedia.com. Thank you so much for listening. I am joined in the virtual studio, as always, by my lovely co-host, Kat. How's it going?
Hey, Baz. That's going good tonight. How are you?
Good. For those of you who are wondering, I literally made up the intro on the fly.
You are so creative. This is why we love you.
Oh, thank you.
And when you're not, we just don't want to hear from you.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Shut up, you jerk. Yeah, jerk. Oy vey. It's been an interesting week. The staff at Codebox had a pretty good meeting, and there's a lot of really neat stuff in the works for you guys. I'm very, very excited. And I look forward to looking at all of our interesting stuff down the line. I'm very, very excited about this week's interview. It's going to be awesome. We have a wonderful guest, and we will get to them shortly. But first, Kat, how was your week?
It was actually slow. This week can't go by fast enough. Actually, the month can't go by fast enough because I'm looking forward to this move. I'm really getting tired of the day-to-day drag of paperwork and cleaning things out. And, you know, speaking of cleaning things out, Baz, I'm going to be getting to my garage here this week or next weekend, and I'm telling you, the stuff I have collected from 1990 with computer hardware is just unbelievably laughable. I mean,
wow.
I mean, we're talking 14.4K modems still in my garage.
That's awesome. Yes! Go 14.4K. That's the best speed ever.
I just do not know what I'm going to do with this stuff. I mean, if anybody has suggestions out there on what I can do with this extra technology that I have on my hands, we're talking hard drives, we're talking modems and cases, and we could put together a ton of new computers. Obviously, they wouldn't be up-to-date computers. But, I mean, this equipment is just – I could run my own warehouse from this stuff. I can't believe how much I have. So if anybody has any suggestions –
Well, you know, if you have any monitors, the ones that are in good condition, I could actually use one. So, in all seriousness, if anyone has a spare monitor, I will pay for shipping and you send it to me because doing video and radio stuff on one monitor is just taxing because it's just like everything's cramped together on one small screen, and I'm like, okay. Don't click off the window or else you're screwed. So,
right.
Yeah. But, have you tried eBay or maybe going to like a vintage computer shop and saying, hey, how much for all this crap?
No, I mean, actually, you know what? I really don't want to sell it. I really want to
donate
it to schools or to, you know, less fortunate. I would really love to do that, but I want to make sure that it's going to be made use. I mean, who really needs a 14.4K modem? Really?
Well, yeah, that's like buying a Model T car and going, I'm going to go on the highway with it, and you're the only one going slower than someone walking. So,
right, exactly, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as monitors go, I have, huge monitors, but they're the really thick ones. I mean, we're talking heavier than, you know, a truck. These monitors are the big, huge monitors and the big, you know, that came with like the big servers back in the day. Here I am telling my age again, but I don't care. It was back then when I first started getting into this stuff and collecting. So, I mean, I have it all left
you
over.
You saved kind of, all that is what
yeah,
worries
I
me. I mean, you might have to go on the show Hoarders or something. That's a little scary. I mean, if you have monitors that are that big from way back when, you might need to go see someone, Kat. There might be a problem.
Yeah. Well, I think it also has a lot to do with the memories, you know, having to do with starting off. I was the only female in my computer class back in the day because it just was not popular with females back then.
Wow.
So, you know,
how many
dates were
you offered? Probably like one every 4 seconds, right? They're like, oh, there's a chick. We should totally ask her out because she must be interested in
the
same thing I am. But as far as gaming-wise, Kat, I know that you have been goo-goo over gaga for Mass Effect 3 and just, like, going crazy. But we will get to that later. I know there is a big holly hoopra to do with Mass Effect 3 still, unfortunately, kind of surrounding everything. But just to go over my week real quick, have some really neat things planned for you guys over the course of the next couple months. Me and Shriggs have some really cool surprises for you. And I also have something that no one knows about except for my wife that we will be trying to start. No, not that, you pervert. Jeez. Wow. But moving on, let us introduce the wonderful interviewees and guests that we have here on the show today. Kat, I'm going to bring them up onto the live screen here, and I will let you take it away from there because I think this pertains to you more than it does to anyone else here on the show. So let's take it away.
Are you guys there? Do we have them with us now?
I think we do.
We are here.
Yeah, we're here. I'm here. Great to be here.
This for our listeners, we have been really looking forward to this interview. We have Tom Lowe and Monty Sharma from Massachusetts Digital Gaming Institute. Am I correct?
Yes. Digital Games Institute. We're based at Becker College here in beautiful central Massachusetts, which is the home of the 10th-ranked Princeton Review-ranked game design and development academic program in the country.
Awesome. We love to hear that. That is wonderful news.
Yeah, when I read that, you guys did just become one of Princeton Review's top 10 undergraduate schools to study video game designs for 2012. And I was just blown away. I am so into education and the society in a whole keeping the industry alive and afloat, especially during economic hardships. Such as these, it's wonderful to see these organizations, and I applaud you guys for keeping up and allowing us to have some time with you tonight.
Well, thank you. I mean, this is it's a terrific opportunity for us to let folks know what we're up to here in New England, and to give you an idea of some of our programs and services and some other activities that we have coming up in the near future.
Awesome, awesome. For those of you who are just now noticing it, there is a small delay that just has to do with just latency and internet stuff. So you are not listening to anything completely weird or it's on your end. It's just latency issues. So don't worry about it. You know, it happens on live TV. So if it happens here, I think it's acceptable. If you guys have any questions for our guest today, please call in at 347-838-9713. That's 347-838-9713. You can call in through any device that allows you to actually use it as a phone. That's Google Talk, Skype. You will have to pay for Skype if you don't already have it. And you can use your mobile cell phone as well. Shriggs will screen your call and make kind of ask something stupid or whatnot. So, Kat, I think we should get right into the questions because I'm very excited to hear about this because I actually did video game design a while back and college just wasn't for me. So I'm very interested in hearing how they have their entire organization set up. So if you guys could explain a little bit more about MathDigi and the purpose of the organization.
Sure. So MassDigi is, as I mentioned a minute ago, based at Becker College here in Central Mass. Our mission is to prompt academic cooperation and economic development in the Commonwealth's games ecosystem. So we work with a lot of different colleges and universities, not just Becker, but a number of other ones, not only in Massachusetts, and that includes schools that you may have heard of, like MIT or Northeastern or WPI or Hampshire College and so on and so forth. So we work with a lot of different academic institutions. We work with companies of all sorts across the state, whether the larger studios or indie studios. And we also work with folks at different levels of government as well, as we try to sort of bring people together and understand what the business is all about and what the opportunities are. So it's a lot of fun. We have a great time, and we're always excited every week. Something new is always happening, so it's terrific.
Yeah, I was really excited to read about some of your programs and some of the services that that you offer to the schools, and that they're really quite intense. In fact, some of the schools that when I previously had went to college, I had went for computer development and design, and I had there was no programs like this offered. Obviously, it was back in the day, and we're not going to get into my age here, even though I had already done that earlier. but previously, we did not have those programs, and they are just wonderful. In fact, my son, who is 10, he absolutely wonderful child. He is gifted and talented, straight-A student, and never has ever had less than an A in any of – I mean, obviously he's 10, but that's still saying a lot for a 10-year-old. And his whole purpose is to go to college for game design. And these programs that I was looking over that you guys offer and assist the colleges with – are the exact programs that parents like myself and even him as a child would benefit. They would glow from, and it's wonderful. Can you explain a little bit about some of those programs and services for our listeners?
Sure, Monty. Why don't you give it a shot? You invented a couple of them. Go ahead.
So, you're absolutely right on how things are different today, in computer science than they were back in the day. And let me tell you, I wish I had a 14.4 modem when I started. So I'm old. the real
carrier pigeon back then.
Exactly. The real shift that we're trying to deal with is video games have to be at the cutting edge. You know, you don't want a video game that looks like last year's game. It's just not going to work. So to do that, we're trying to do a lot of things to bring technology and industry focus into what's happening in the curriculum. So we do something we call a reverse sabbatical program, where we're bringing projects from industry where students can work on them. The latest one is actually doing some work on Family Guy Online. I can't give you a lot of details because it's not announced yet, but the students get to work with the team from Family Guy Online, test out some ideas, and work as if they were part of the actual dev team. So awesome experience there. We're building out a virtual production lab so that any college student who's studying game design can access the latest tools and technologies wherever they are, so mount everything up in the cloud and let them pull it down and work on it. Third thing we're running is our summer innovation program, where we've got a chance for students. You know, the tough thing when you're a student is they give you part of a problem, and you're going to learn how to solve this one isolated problem, you know, some sorting algorithm or some animation task or whatever else. But you don't really get a chance to see something built from end to end. So in the summer program, we'll actually have students working on a project from start to finish. We scope it out so it can get done in that period of time. And they work with a team of students. And then mentors we bring in from video game companies around the region. So, you know, folks from Tencent, Warner Brothers, Harmonix, you name it. We're pulling people in from all sorts of companies to work with the students so they, you know, get some decent advice and they actually get to build a game or part, you know, and that's really, I think, the critical thing, because when you graduate from school, practical information, especially in game development, is the most important thing. So those are our big programs right now, and the game challenge that we'll talk about.
Those
that
are
is
actually
really
some
cool.
Really, yeah, really great programs, especially where you're allowing the current business or the current design and development business and individuals work with these students. Now, is this these students get internship for this, or is it just part of the program within their school?
It depends on each school. So, you know, we work with multiple schools, and so some schools run it as this is part of a class they're taking. Some of them give them internship credits for it, so it's both.
And now this the program that you're talking about with the industry professionals working with the students, is that the reverse sabbatical program that you're referring to?
Yes, that's right.
Now you also offer the
It's always
the virtual...
difficult, particularly
Go ahead.
I was just popping. It's always difficult for students to access internships. You know, this is a pretty fast-moving industry, and there are not as many opportunities as there might be in some other industries that are a little bit more, let's say, lethargic. So to have this where we're bringing internships to students instead of trying to send students to the internships seems to be a better model and one that fits better. So we hope that we can spool up a whole sort of nice inventory of these projects and roll them out so dozens of student teams across New England, but in particular in Massachusetts, will have this opportunity.
Well, yeah, definitely, and I'm sure with the success of programs like this, the statistics have to show that it also gives the students an increase from school to employment opportunities as soon as they graduate. I mean, that has to be phenomenal for the school's statistics in that way. Am I correct?
Well, we hope so. It's MassDigi is only about a year old, so this is our first semester actually where we've been working with students on the reverse sabbatical side. We spent last fall really planning for this. We're rolling it out this semester, we'll expand it over the course of the summer into the innovation program, and then start it all over again next fall with the beginning of the academic year. So, we hope this just becomes a regular cycle where we have lots of interesting projects for students, and lots of opportunities for industry folks to engage with not only students, also with faculty, which is a critical piece as well, so that we have that pipeline of talent really moving through and getting all the things that they need to get in order to come out the other end as really highly skilled game designers or developers.
Now, do you guys have a chance or possibly have a chance to work with like some of the bigger game development companies and possibly get your students internships there, like maybe say at Blizzard or Activision? Is that something that you guys would be able to hopefully do in the future, or is that something that you guys haven't really thought of yet?
Yeah, no, we are talking to all sorts of companies, including some of those guys, and the whole thing is finding the right kind of a project, because mm-hmm. what you don't want to do is delay a key feature for a game. And so as we work with them, we'll find slots on interesting things, and that's part of how we got Family Guy. Yeah, it's really cool IP. It's a big development and a great place to start, and then we're just going to keep pushing it.
Awesome. another question that I had was for someone like myself who tried to go into game design when I was a younger lad, so to speak, is your college suited for the older generation? I guess, you know, like 30 plus type of people that are, you know, have a family or maybe have kids or can only work or attend school maybe one class a semester or a week or whatnot. Do you guys cater to those type of people as well?
Actually, we do. And I can speak from the perspective, we're most familiar with Becker because obviously Becker is our home. And not only does the college offer the sort of traditional undergraduate track, but it also offers through what they call their accelerated and professional learning division courses where folks who are in the workplace or other non-traditionally aged can take courses on game design and development. So I think they could look those up at becker.edu and get an idea of what courses are available, when they're offered. I think a number of them are offered online, so I think that's probably the best for most folks out there. There are also you know, courses at a number of other institutions across the state, and you know, actually, there are, you know, nationally speaking, there are over 300 colleges and universities with programs in game design or development at the undergraduate level, let alone many, many more schools entering into the marketplace with graduate degrees at the master's level and even at the doctoral level. So there's all sorts of academic opportunities across the country. In particular here in New England, we have a number of terrific options. I'd encourage anybody who is interested to, you know, shop around a little bit and look in your local region, and if not, look for those opportunities where there is distance online learning, opportunities for you to take them from wherever you are, whether that be Ohio or Arkansas or Delaware.
Awesome. Kat, I know you had a couple other questions, so why don't you get to those real quick? That would be awesome.
Yeah, actually, I really wanted to also kind of focus a little bit on your education working group. Now, I know that your education working group pretty much brings together the educators and the technologists and the researchers interested in exploring the games and learning and pretty much engages them in informally and formally learning the basics of working together as a group. Is this basically for the sake of the students, or is this more of a seminar convention to allow those already in the programs to keep updated with the industry, or is it both?
I'd say it's more of the latter. Primarily, the education working group is for game educators and game-based learning professionals, so on and so forth, to come together in a, as you mentioned, a both informal and formal way to share ideas, collaborate on projects, and get an idea of what's going on in the sort of greater ecosystem outside of their own institutions. So we hope that then turns into a couple of that larger group breaks into some subgroups or special interest groups where folks have a particular interest. Maybe it's in gesture based, or maybe it's a game based learning. That folks who have a particular interest in a particular sub-discipline within game design, game development, will be able to come together and work on these things, and they can share ideas and work across institutions so that and up and down the degree level as well. By the way, I should also mention that we do work with a number of high schools in the area. There's a large pool of students in many different K through 12 systems that are becoming more and more interested. As you guys might know, in New York and in Chicago, there are already a couple of public schools that are entirely have game-based curriculum. So it's really an interesting field, there's a lot of interest, particularly on the STEM side, which is science, technology, engineering, math. But, of course, there's a lot of interest on the art side as well. So it's a really dynamic field, and things are changing quite dramatically all the time on the education front.
Awesome. We actually have a caller, so I am going to bring them in. And Nathan, are you there, sir? Welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning.
Nathan has a question for you guys. So, Nathan, why don't you go ahead with your question and ask away.
No problem. Okay. So the wavelength that I am on currently is that you guys are talking more along the lines of people who are interested in getting into game design and getting into the industry but aren't ready for the commitment that is college or can't, because college is it a 3 or 4 year thing over in America? And it's fairly long. And it's not really a guarantee of passing. Is that correct? 4 years. Okay. There we go. Yes, I am calling in.
I thought that was you.
Yeah. And so the interesting thing that I'm going to ask is, I mean, the gaming industry right now is really hard to get into. I know this because I'm doing a similar thing right now. I'm learning web design at a, not a college, but almost a community college equivalent. And it's almost like a third party. And basically, my question is that I keep hearing lots and lots of people in the industry say that the gaming industry is really, really difficult to get into, and it's getting worse and worse because more and more people are trying to get in, but the rate of expansion of the actual industry is slower than the rate of people who want to come in. I mean, how does that factor in to what you guys are doing, essentially, is what I'm asking. I mean, I'm not saying it's something bad. I'm just curious to see, I mean, how it works out, because it's not like it's like accounting or something where there's almost an infinite supply on both ends of people who want to do it and people who are hiring. I mean, there's never really a shortage or anything. It's stabilized, essentially.
But how much fun is accounting?
That's a question. That's a question that actually we talked a lot about at GDC last week in San Francisco, the Game Developers Conference. And the, you know, I'll say on one hand, game development is easier to get into than accounting, because to get into accounting, you actually need to have specifically the accounting degree.
There's
in game development, you can actually get in without. Right. You don't need to have a degree in that field. I mean, I have a BA in history. Not particularly useful in my profession in gaming, but I've done well with it. You know, so whether you're coming in through community, through fan art, fan fiction, mods, all sorts of other things like that, there are paths in. Now, having said that, the kinds of things that we're engaged in, you know, a lot of the things we're doing are targeted to students who are in college, and the point of that is if they can get real skills by working with industry, they are vastly more useful to industry. So typically, the first 3 years after somebody graduates from college, they're not very useful. They're actually, no. In some cases, more of a drag on your team than a help to your team.
I'm trying to remember who it
but
was.
But you need to find a way to season them up. So
there's an interview that I heard with somebody from. I'm trying to remember the company. It was a game design company, one we all know. And the guy was talking about how they manage intake and how the gaming business is really hard to get into. And I can't remember it for the life of me. It's a European one. And he was talking about how basically when they try and recruit people who are just about to come out of college, but what they do is they're trying to find the people. They're not necessarily trying to find people who got really good grades or know coding really well. They just throw them in the deep and give them these really absurd, even non-related problem-solving things. Like they give them all of the I'm trying to think of the word. Like they try and make them solve Rubik's Cubes and all of these really seemingly random things because they're trying to see if they can just wrap their head around solving problems as opposed to doing coding, because their rationale and was anybody can learn code, to an extent, like design, anybody can learn to an extent infrastructure. They can learn these little things, or big things rather, over a space of time. You can copy out of a textbook through college. That's what they thought, at least. You can basically read your way through college,
yeah.
But they wanted to see people who they said, and this is what they said. They said there's a difference between a code monkey and an actual game designer. We wanted a game designer or somebody who could actually make a game. So I think that's a big difference as well. I mean, is that true to an extent? Like,
the problem is you can't tell one student from another if all you can see is their grades. Somebody who gets, you know, A's may not necessarily be better than the person who got B's in reality. So what matters, you know, and where you get past the Rubik's Cube problem is when you can say, hey, I worked on this project, and here's the work I did, and it's real industry work. And so that's exactly, that's what we're trying to do is, you know, here's some real industry work. The game challenge that we're running in April, if you win with your idea, so you could enter with an idea. If you win, we'll give you a team to help build a game. Now, you can walk into a game company and say, hey, look, this was my idea. Here's the role I had on the team, and this is what we produced. That's way better than I got straight A's.
Well, it's infinitely
and another,
better.
Another good thing with the Mass Digi, the way that they're going about this entire industry, is that when you're talking about getting into the industry as a game developer as opposed to, say, an accountant, the gaming industry and the technology industry and the electronic industry in a whole, there are so many different things to do. You know, as an accountant, you're going in, you really should be good with math, and that's basically the straight line to it. But with the industry, the technology industry and the gaming industry, there are so many different jobs that somebody can do. And Mass Digi looks at that, and they understand that, and they see that not just one person who's good at design, but one person who is good at art can also be a quest developer for a game. They really do expand on this, and
definitely.
I think they bring that out to bring the best out in a lot of students. So, Nathan, thank you very much for your call.
Ma'am.
Really appreciate you listening.
Yeah, thanks for the question, buddy. We really appreciate it. That was a wonderful caller. Very well thought out.
Yeah,
very
interesting.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
almost a professional caller.
Well, it's actually kind of funny. He's actually a really, really good buddy of mine who lives in Australia. And I guess he's going into, like, politics as well or something. So he's, like, a really brainy professional guy. And he just turned 18. So congrats on him for finally becoming an adult. Yay. You are now legal to do anything you want to. So he actually segued into our next question, which is kind of coincidental and kind of funny. Why don't you go more in depth on this challenge that you mentioned, and you know, what are the rules? Who is eligible? Wow, that's a hard word to say for me. Apparently, to enter the challenge, how can our listeners enter? What are the prizes? And just kind of go as in-depth as possible on this gaming challenge that you guys are hosting.
Sure. So why don't I start off, and I'll let Tim pop in with all the things I got wrong or missed. to enter, you need to be human. That's about the only restriction. Anybody can enter. You do have to physically show up in Massachusetts. So, you know, you come into Massachusetts. What we're doing is we're running some sessions on the Friday that are going to teach you how to pitch a game. And I got to see some really talented sort of leaders in the industry pitching games last week. And it's amazing what you see when somebody can tell you a whole game concept. And you guys know how complex and deep games are with plot lines and, you know, all the different things they're doing. And somebody who can bring that down to, you know, 10, 15 minutes of this is the game and have somebody else understand it. Awesome skill. You know, we're going to go into what makes games good. How do you make them great? What are the tweaks and the essence behind it? We're going to take a look at serious games. And, again, this is one of the things for people looking to break into gaming is, look, it's not easy to get a job at Blizzard your first day. But if you've worked on 3D simulations and a lot of the sort of games that are being used in serious environments, you'll get much better skills, have a better chance to break in. We're also going to have, you know, our mentors there talking about how they got into game development, what they do, what their background was, how they broke in, so folks can learn from that. The competition itself, you know, we're looking at sort of two main things. One is the best prototype, so you actually have some code, and you're saying this is, you know, this is the game that I'm building, and this is why it's good. Second one is just the game design, so you don't have to have any software written. You could be an artist, you could be a writer, you could even be a history major. You could show up, and I'm ineligible to enter, unfortunately, but you can show up and say, hey, here's the game I want to build, and this is why it's cool and great. The prize, you know, the big prize that we're offering is we're actually going to give you a team to work with you over the summer, so one of our summer innovation teams, and the team of mentors to help take this idea and finish the title. So we want things that we can finish in 3 months, and then we've got partners that are going to help launch it into the marketplace. And as we go through that whole cycle of you've built it, you've launched it into the marketplace, try and get you some help to tweak and improve it. And then next year at PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo East that's held in Boston, we'll actually do sort of a postmortem on the whole cycle. And, you know, the game developers come in and say, hey, we showed up. We didn't know much, but here was our idea. Here's how it was to build it. And then here's what happened when we launched it into the marketplace. And we'll do this whole cycle again. What did I miss, Tim?
No, there's some other prizes involved, but the big exciting stuff is the fact that, you know, we have our publishing partners that will help you actually launch the game. So and that, I think, makes it quite a bit different than most of the game competitions or challenges that exist out there where winning is the sort of end of the process. In our challenge, winning is just the beginning.
Yeah, actually, that is such a wonderful idea, because we have actually been talking a lot about bringing the students from the classrooms out into the professional industry and finding jobs and where they can become stabilized and secure in a career. And that's great. I mean, that's wonderful to be able to do that and have the students have these wonderful dreams of working for big companies like Blizzard and Treon or in, you know, just the big name companies that are out there right now. But this competition, this challenge actually brings forth to the table the students who can actually start their own company. I mean, if you can create a game from scratch and get the help that you need and then finish it, that's an opportunity not to work for these big companies, but to be a big company yourself. And I think that's what we need right now, is not to just look for our jobs, but to be able to have that opportunity to make our own job. And I think it's a wonderful challenge, and I really support it, and I really think it's a great idea what you guys are doing. And since this is your first year, obviously, you'll have to keep us informed as you go on in the winter and in the success of everything that's been going on. But I really do see opportunities from the programs and the challenges that you guys have to offer of seeing the next big gaming company from graduating from the schools that offer your programs.
Hey, we hope so. Thank you.
We'll keep you guys informed as to, you know, the competition and the winners. And, you know, it'd actually be great to bring the folks who win back onto your show, and especially your interest in, you know, people breaking into the business. meet some people, find out how they're doing, and we'll get their game on shelves.
Great. And people can, you know, they can check out our website, massdigi.org, massdigi.org, and or follow us on Twitter, mass_digi, or Facebook, /massdigi, and track us and see what's going on with the challenge and all the other things that we're up to.
Awesome, awesome. You know, one thing I did kind of want to interject here with your point, Kat, of people starting their own gaming companies and et cetera, et cetera. You know, that is really what I think that the gaming industry needs to be about now. Like you stated, you know, it's something that here, even at Codebox, we're striving to try and make and get people's word out there that not necessarily don't have the funding or the expertise on how to do that. And, you know, a small-time podcast is maybe a small-time podcast, but if you're able to reach at least 100 people for free, I mean, that's gold to you guys. So I think that with what MassDigi is doing is great, because they're giving someone that doesn't have a really good chance of success to have a really, really good chance of success. And even if it doesn't work out for them, they still had the experience of actually trying and seeing what it's like and seeing how much work is put into it and how much time is committed, and et cetera, et cetera. So I really applaud you guys for trying something that, quite honestly, I have never seen a college do before. I think that if this happened while I was in college, I think it would have been a lot more suitable for the hands-on type people that learn that way, because this is just so hands-on. It's like, okay, well, just try it. Here you go. I mean, if we're going to want you, but just try it. It's not, okay, read this book on Maya, which I did, and I was like, I don't want to read a book. I want to actually try and use the program. And they're like, well, that's not for two semesters down the road. I'm just like, well, what am I doing? What am I paying you guys for? So I really applaud you guys on what you're trying, and I really hope a lot of other institutions, especially in the game design, kind of take up your model and whatnot. So awesome job, guys. Kat, did you have any other questions for them? Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Before we actually let you guys go, and we appreciate you taking the time for us, but I know that you are always open for supporters and sponsors and other business industry professionals to get involved with the organization. Could you just repeat again how they would go about contacting you and the website on that MassDigi has?
Sure. You know, we're at massdigi.org, massdigi.org. Anybody can call me directly, 508-373-9460. Drop us an email. All that information is on the website. Follow us on Twitter, mass_digi, or find us on Facebook. So we're always willing to chat and talk to folks. You know, we pretty much go anywhere, anytime, any place to let folks know what we're up to. And by the way, before I forget, Monty, what's the special code for folks who want to enter the game challenge? So they don't, there's the
so
for free.
For free.
Yeah. What's
yeah.
The...
All right. So only tell this to your favorite friends. But if people want to enter the game challenge, the promo code is Digi Challenge, all one word, D-I-G-I Challenge. I don't know how to spell challenge, but you can look it up.
So yeah,
sound like
we
man
hope,
after
that,
my own heart, sir.
We hope that maybe you two have an idea you could work on and submit into the competition. Hey, there you go.
Awesome.
I might supply some of my 14.4K modems. There you go.
You know, it's really kind of a weird quinky dink that we have you guys on this week. There's actually a couple people I know that have a couple game ideas, and they would so hugely benefit from this. So I will give them that code, and maybe, just maybe, you guys will be able to meet them and say, hey, yeah, this is all your fault. So Just wanted to throw that out there. But
thank
yeah, cool. Well, yeah, send them our way.
Awesome.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate it.
Yeah, guys, just thank you so much. I mean, this is probably one of my, not to play favorites here, but this is probably one of my favorite interviews so far that we've done since the show started. I just love it. It's great. I love seeing companies try and step out of the box and not just make another Call of Duty, so to speak. It's really nice to see you guys reinventing the wheel again. And thank you so much again for joining us and being a part of the show. Again, guys, please check out their website. It is www.massdigi.org, massdigi.org. Awesome, awesome, awesome site. Awesome people and very an awesome learning path that if you guys are contemplating the rigorous challenges of game design, I would highly go with these guys because they are awesome. So once again, guys, thank you so much. And if you have any closing statements, I will allow you to speak them now.
Monty, go ahead. I'll let you wrap it up.
I'll just say the beauty of game design is you're building stuff that you like to do, you like to play, and your friends like to play. So, for folks who are listening, it's something that you can try, and you can try as a fan and get into. I know most community managers come out of the fan ranks.
Excellent advice, Monty. Thank you, Monty and Tim from massdigi.org. I would highly recommend visiting them, and hopefully we'll be able to get you guys back on after the challenge and with the winner. Does that sound like something you guys might be interested in doing?
You bet.
Sounds great.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, that was awesome. I want to go back to school now.
But radio's not enough for you?
No, apparently not. I need more attention, damn it. I'm actually going to get Shriggs in here. Are you there, sir? Shriggs.
Hey, Baz.
Turn down your radio. I was able to say it. I feel so happy. Hey, you said earlier that you have a pitch, so are you going to go and use the code and go into the challenge and see if you come out the victor?
I just might.
Awesome.
I just might.
Awesome, awesome. And I know that you have a buddy as well that we're keeping super secret right now that might have a game idea. So definitely give him the code because I think it would be really neat to see people that have an actual idea for a original legit game enter this competition, guys. Just kind of a clarification, it is going to be a lot of work and a lot of commitment, so make sure you have the balls to do it, because trust me, it is a lot of work. I have tried and failed many times because a lot of the people that I have gotten to commit for it show up for a day, a week, and then you never hear from them again. So, I mean,
It's going to take a lot of work, but that's the whole point of the challenge is how dedicated are you? If you can't handle, the heat, get out of the kitchen, so to speak.
Yeah.
So you really do have to be devoted and put your time and your effort into it, and especially with a team. I mean, you're not just doing it for yourself. You're doing it for a bunch of other people who have the same dreams and goals. And to just kind of put things aside and say, I'll get to it when I can, I can't do it right now, is really not a good thing to do. You really have to be committed to your team. And because it does, I mean, you can be the most brilliant person on earth, but it's going to take a team to accomplish something together. And I think that's the most important thing to remember when entering the challenge.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. Shriggs, I'm going to put you back in the call screening room just for now. If you have any points you'd like to make, you can put yourself back into the live and scream at us. So, Guys, if you guys have any questions, comments, opinions, whatever, please call in 347-838-9713. We're going to be moving along to our gaming portion of the show, which is my second favorite. I always enjoy interviewing people because I like talking and I like listening to people talk. I'm one of those weird people that like old people that just kind of sit in a room and can just listen to their stories for hours and be like, oh, this is really fun. I'm actually enjoying my time. So, Kat, I'm going to let you kind of just go crazy about Mass Effect 3 right now because I know you're probably chomping at the bit to tell everyone how awesome this game is.
Actually, I was just hoping you'd let me leave early from the podcast so I could go play. But I see that's not going to happen.
No, unfortunately, you have a job to do. And
darn it.
Yeah, it sucks, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it does. Oh, well. No, I am glorifying myself in this game. I really, really am. Obviously, it's because I'm a Mass Effect fan. Mm-hmm. Have been since the beginning. You know, I love reading the books. I love, you know, I went to GameStop today and I picked up two more copies of the game, one for my husband and one for my son, because I was just like, you have got to play this game.
Where's my copy? come on.
You know, Christmas is what, 6 months down the road?
Yeah, but see, by then I want something else. So I mean, come on.
I know Guild Wars 2 will then come out, of course.
Well, apparently it's rumored to come out this year, but that's been what, the last 2 years? It's supposed to come out that year, and then it just keeps getting pushed back. So
yeah,
we'll see.
We'll kind of see how that comes along. But as for Mass Effect 3, you know, and I'm not gonna give away any spoilers or anything because it really is one of those games where you have to see for yourself. So if you don't have the game and if you don't plan on getting the game or if you're one of those individuals who like to wait until the game's been out a little bit to see how many bugs have been in it and if any bugs have been fixed or how much downloadable content's going to be and so forth, if you're one of those iffy type of consumers, gaming consumers, that's fine too. You can go to our website at www.codeboxmedia.com and you can watch the videos that we're going to be doing. I am putting the story-based version of Mass Effect 3 for our female Shepherd up on Codebox Media every week. And you can follow along with her storyline and watch how that unfolds and kind of get a feel of how the game works without actually going out and buying the game until you've decided that is really
right,
what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would highly recommend that at www.codeboxmedia.com. Again, you can watch her lifespan unfold from there. But, Baz, I mean, oh my gosh, I'm blown away. I mean,
yeah.
Literally, the game is just, it's phenomenal. It really makes me want to be Shepherd.
Do you think it's because of the story, or do you think it's because it's the last game in the series? Like, or is it just something that you've been waiting for a really long time, and you're just really kind of giddy over it right now? Or do you honestly think the story is that captivating and that just oh my goshing type of, if you want to use that as a word?
Right. No, I think it's a mixture of them.
Okay.
But I think if I had to make any types of numerical preferences, the top portion, the number one reason would be the storyline. And just to make it clear, the head writer for Mass Effect did leave lead BioWare just recently. And I think
kind of sad news, really.
It was sad news, but I think he knew this beforehand, and I think that it was like, you know, Charlie Brown when Charles Schulz had passed away, he said nobody else is going to write my comics when
right.
I pass away, they're done. This is because Charlie Brown was my baby, and I think as a writer of these series and getting into your character and the people and just the background history of everything, you grasp that. And you, if you know this is going to be your last series, you're going to want to go out with a bang. And
right.
You're going to want it to be the most wonderful story, whether it's an ending or romantically or, you know, combat or whatever, you are going to want it to be total kick-ass. And I think that's what he did. He just really put his heart and soul into it because it really is a wonderful, wonderful storyline. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm a fan. I mean, I've been gaming for, you know, 20-plus years, and no other game has really encaptured me as much as this game has. And I didn't even start reading the books until, you know, after I played the game. Now, if I'd read the books before I started playing the game, I might be able to be saying, well, I think mostly you're into it because you had this vision of Mass Effect when you read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you were either really into it, or some people on the opposite hand say, I don't like it because I was into the book and it was nothing like I read in the book.
Right.
You know, so it was, I think that just the storyline was so good, and the background and the history, and having been from seeing Shepard grow from, you know, this normal person to this universal hero that didn't really seem to be a universal hero, never even intended to be, just kind of went with either her or his heart, or went with gut instinct, you know, depending on which side you play, Renegade or Paragon. So,
right, okay.
You know, so for the most part, I really think the storyline grasped me. I really think that, and I haven't gotten to the ending yet. I'm really taking my sweet time because unlike Star Wars The Old Republic, I felt like I was being rushed through.
I reached
50, so I'm going to hit that space bar to get through the conversations just because
From what I've heard, Star Wars, I mean, honestly, again, I don't want to turn this into, you know, Star Wars The Republic sucks, I hate it, blah, blah, blah. But the stories of Star Wars just were not as well written as Mass Effect. I mean, I think because there were so many other ones involved that, you know, sure that the stories were actually pretty good for some of the classes in Star Wars, but I think that Mass Effect has just had so much time catered to it. It's been written out for years and years, and it's been fine-tuned with the needle-nose pliers and a comb. And I think that's why that maybe you're so crazy over it, because it's just such a good story. And, you know, as I said on last week's show, I am not buying the game until the DLC thing kind of gets worked out. And I actually have an article about, I guess, you know, everyone, you know, screaming that the DLC should be free. And, you know, BioWare's like, oh, well, this stuff has been worked on after the game was done and after the discs were all set and blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out it wasn't, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, so from your point of view, there, Kat, you say the story is just phenomenally amazing.
Well, see, I'm not – and this may be a good way to kind of differentiate between girl gamers and guy gamers.
Mm-hmm.
Mass Effect caters to, in as you've seen in the development of their games, they cater to all types of individuals, and they listen to the community where they realize women were playing.
Right.
I mean, girls were actually playing this game. So now we can't just have a male Shepard who kisses a female, you know, companion here.
Mm-hmm.
They want girls who want to be able to choose males as their companions, or they want females who just aren't interested in the guys and they want to get with another one of their females.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they really opened up, you know, a whole can of worms with that aspect of the taboo stuff back then being
right.
Now. But I think the point of it is males look for, and don't quote me on this, but statistically looking at how the males and the females differentiate between, you know, what they're looking for in a game, the men are looking for a little bit different than what the women are looking for. I mean, I'm looking for combat, don't get me wrong. I want to see combat. You know, I'm mm-hmm. a PvP nut. You know how I am.
Yeah.
I like to see that. But the story is really what intrigues me. And so the downloadable content, I could freaking care less about.
Right.
You know, I don't care. If I have to pay for it and I really want it, yeah, I'm going to do it. But I don't care. You mm-hmm. can offer it to me all you want. But I bought the game, and the story is what I'm focusing on. You know,
well,
the story
yeah,
is the
of course,
growth
of course.
That.
Of course.
You know, so I think that's the difference, is that a lot of people who are complaining about the downloadable content and so forth, and I completely understand people. Do not spam my email. That I don't care, because I do completely understand that. But I think a majority of people who are concerned about that are more of the combat, PvP, you know, the multiplayer. I need to have this, the best in this game, because I want to kick ass.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I understand that. You know, that's I understand that completely, because I do too. But for right now, if I were not able to afford the downloadable content, or I wasn't able to get it because I didn't have an iPad or an iPhone or anything like that, I wouldn't care, because mm-hmm. I had the game and I wanted to see the story and how it turned out first before I decided I do want to have the downloadable content, if that makes
right.
sense.
Right. And you know, the story for me, you know, is kind of a big deal, but my biggest issue is they were saying, well, this Prothean DLC, well, you're going to have to pay for it because it wasn't done before. It was done later, after production was done. And an article in the Escapist magazine, apparently the DLC was already on the discs. So that basically comes into question, okay, so BioWare either lied or is incredibly stupid. And based on all the games they've made, they're not stupid. They're a very smart company.
Right.
So to me, this just makes me feel so much better about my argument. And again, guys, I'm not bashing Mass Effect. I'm not bashing the game at all. I'm bashing the company that chose to go down this route. And you sure as hell better believe that BioWare was in on this. It wasn't EA's fault. You can't just blame EA, EA's ruining another good company. BioWare chose to be merged with EA. It's not like EA went and threatened them and said, hey, you know, we're blah, blah, blah. I mean, BioWare saw it as a business opportunity, because EA is, what, number one or number two distributor in video game sales in the world or something like that. I think next to Activision or Steam or something.
Right.
So BioWare knows what they're doing. And after kind of getting screwed over by Star Wars and their collector's edition, and, you know, just the lack of anything in that game that what should have been out on December, and now they're releasing it in March, and I'm just like, all this stuff should have been in the game on day one. I it doesn't matter. It cost $2 million. It should have been in the game on day one. End of story. Argument's over on that one. But, you know, that really kind of made me question, okay, well, is BioWare getting too big for themselves? Are they saying, well, we're BioWare, so anyone's going to pay anything for DLC no matter what? And they were right. You know, I mean, I don't know how much Mass Effect did, but I know it was ridiculous. My local GameStop had, gosh, what was it? I think it was like 300 to 400 pre-orders in literally a 30x30 store. I mean, there was like they were in their store till like 3 or 4 in the morning that night for midnight release. I mean, people were just lined
wow.
up everywhere. It was ridiculous. So to think that, you know, people aren't going to buy this because of this is completely ridiculous. And, you know, yeah, people are going to pirate it. I am not going to pirate this game. I'm going to say that right now. There have been a couple games that I have pirated because I did not feel that they were worth it. Namely, Skyrim was one of them. I played it for about 10 hours and was like, this game's stupid. It's boring. It wasn't what it was supposed to be, and, you know, it was overhyped. So, and Mass Effect 3 is allowed to be overhyped because it's awesome. Just based on the videos I've seen from your videos, I want to play the game, but I can't bring myself to feel not guilty about playing it because of what they're doing and because their business practices. And
okay.
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, Beth. I was just going to say, do you not buying the game, is that mainly because, now I know the reasoning behind it, but if the game were free, would you play it?
Okay, well, that, I mean, wouldn't anybody? Because if everything was free, then there wouldn't be an issue.
Okay, no. If the game itself were free, not the downloadable content, okay, and this thing with having to buy the iPad or having the extra little things.
Right.
If you have that stuff. But if the game were free, would you buy it? Or would you play it?
You know, I honestly cannot answer that question honestly. I'd like to say no, but, you know, free is free. So, you know.
So the point being, you don't want to spend the $69 or this whatever, if you get collector's edition or whatever, you know, the standard edition or whatever, you don't want to spend that money because is it more of that or is it more of your rage because of the issue?
Well, this is, let's see, okay. Basically, it comes down to the way that they're trying to, quote-unquote, milk the franchise for every last penny. That is my main reason for not really buying this game. It comes down to what they did in the past and to what they're doing now. Because for Mass Effect 2, this exact same situation happened, but they gave the content that they had that they worked on after, and it was after the game was finalized, and they gave everybody a code that had the game pre-ordered already or bought a new copy that they could download it off BioWare's DLC servers. And it was that green-scaled dude, whatever his name was. So they've done it before, and it was free. So why... Again, from a business standpoint, this completely makes sense because they're making money. They're making a lot of money from the extra $10 that people are buying. So I get that, or the extra $20 that people are buying from the collector's edition. I get that.
Right.
Go ahead.
But if, say, like they had these down, say they had, let's say, five
mm-hmm.
downloadable contents, okay, and I got the game for you. You're
okay.
trying to tell me you wouldn't play the game. But it yet
I see
if
what you're
the
saying.
Downloadable
okay.
contents
okay.
were 50, you know, that's $50 right there
mm-hmm.
still that you would now have the option of downloading. Would you still play the game if I got the game for you?
As long as the DLC was not released on day one and it was released at least a month after the game was launched. Because my issue with – now, okay, let's back up here for a second. I don't have a problem with DLC at all. I have purchased a few DLCs myself. I like extra content. I like when companies do that. But when the game is just released on day one and there is DLC on day one, that should be included no matter what. If it comes with a collector's edition, great. They paid extra money for it, great. But – it still should come with anyone who pre-ordered the game on day one because they pre-ordered it and because they took time to actually pre-order it. There's going to be a crap ton of people that are going to disagree with me on this because they're going to say, well, this DLC was made way beforehand or way after the game was come out. And I kept saying, no, it's not because there's no way because there was evidence way back in, I think it was last June or something, that Prothean voice acting lines were leaked. So this obviously was already on and ready to ship. And obviously it's already on the Mass Effect 3 discs. So that means that this DLC content was actually done before the game was even shipped. And it wasn't done after the game was shipped and after all this other pre technical blah, blah. Does that make sense, or am I not explaining myself right?
No, you are explaining yourself correctly. And like I said in the previous podcast, I completely agreed with your view on the situation. And, you know, and I support you as, you know, 100% as far as you not wanting to buy the game for the sake mm-hmm. of trying to limit the industry on taking advantage of their gamers. And,
right.
you know, and I've always supported that. I always thought that was a great thing to have. I mean, we always need people who do that, and we need people to support people who do that. You know, but I understand that you don't feel guilty for, you know, or feel left out or anything like that as far as that. But I know for me, I would buy the game.
Mm-hmm.
I just wouldn't give them my extra money.
Right, right. Well,
you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, I don't
yeah.
care about
no,
that.
No, yeah, yeah.
Stuff.
I mean, and you know, I understand that the Prothean thing is not a, according to BioWare, a major part of the story, but that's a load of bullcrap, because it is. It's like, even in your first prologue video, they even mentioned something about the Prothean weapon or something. And I'm just like, wait, what? How is this not a major part of Mass Effect when you hear about it from Mass Effect 1 all the way through this game? They tried to cover it up, and they were caught. And I'm really interested to see what BioWare says, let alone if they say anything. This article was posted March 8th at 3:17 p.m. So, you know, whatever time zone the Escapist is in, this was posted 2 days ago. So this happened fairly recently. So Kat, to answer your question, I would play the game as long as the DLC is not released on day one. And as long as it's a far enough time away where it doesn't look like a coincidence, like, oh, next day there's DLC. Whoops, we forgot to tell you. You know,
no,
that
no,
kind of
I completely, yeah, I completely understand that. But also look at the fact of how much did you pay for Star Wars: The Old Republic Collector's Edition?
$150. Do you have to remind?
You paid $150 for a game that BioWare made,
mm-hmm.
but they did not, in your opinion, and I know in some of my opinion as well,
they screwed everybody.
So
terrible.
You just gave BioWare $150
yeah.
for a box set that you don't even play anymore.
Yeah, yeah. My
point being, what is the difference between you playing Mass Effect and actually liking the game and playing it to its full potential, even if mm-hmm. you don't get the download, because you just used that $50 or $60. You made use of that $60 more than you made use of that $150.
Right, right. And
does that make sense?
No, it does. But my concern is that I'm not as big of a Mass Effect fan as a lot of people. The story, I really enjoyed
right.
it. I thought, okay, this is a really nice thought-out story. But again, it comes down to the different type of gamers. I mean, my wife is a female gamer. For those of you who are wondering, yes, I am actually married to a woman. I know that's been in common question quite a few times.
Lies.
Shut up. But, you know, she doesn't really care for story games. She likes the zombie ones where she can just get an Uzi and just shoot bitches. So, I mean, she's smiling because it's so true. I mean, she plays World of Warcraft because everyone knows there's no story in there unless you really look for it. You know, she plays on one of the free servers, and I made her go on the Burning Crusade one because that's when all the content was, you know, fun in my opinion. So I really think it does come down to your gaming preference. And, you know, I bought Star Wars kind of out of blind faith to BioWare. And I was in the beta when I pre-ordered it because I was really impressed with what they were doing. I was expecting the game on launch to be so much more, and it just wasn't. It felt like the beta was still... Like even now, I'm still feeling like I'm playing the beta. There's really no change. patch 1.2 is coming out, great. It's going to add a whole bunch of stuff that should have been in that Rift effing had on day in the effing beta, for crying out loud. I mean, Rift had more content than Star Wars did on day one launch, and everyone bashes Rift for having no content. So, I mean, cool. The game's voice acted. Great. I don't care. It's an MMO. I'm playing with multiple people. If I wanted a single-player Star Wars KOTOR 3 game, then they should have made that. I think it comes down to just your personal preference. And again, guys, I'm not bashing Mass Effect 3 at all, because the game looks phenomenal, and it's killing me not playing it. But I feel like I'm playing it through the videos that Kat does over on youtube.com/codebossmedia. And
because Baz likes playing a woman.
Shut up. Just shut up. And I feel that I'm not really missing out, because I'm able to watch other people play it and still kind of enjoy the story.
Yeah, and I don't think you are bashing that at all. And I am such a Mass Effect, you know, fan, and
yeah.
I would defend Mass Effect with, you know, my life or anything like that. But I don't think that you're bashing them. I think you have valid points, and you know, like I said, I support you in what you're doing, and that just.
Yeah,
it's my Christmas list to get you.
Right. Well, you know, and if the game was free, you know, honestly, now that I'm thinking, I probably would play it, because I wouldn't be so upset with paying $10 for DLC. Now, granted, if it was on day one, I probably would wait a while and just be like, you know what, I'll wait for the Game of the Year pack DLC to come out, and I'll pay $20 for all five. Which is what I'm probably going to do with Mass Effect, is just wait for the Game of the Year edition to come out next year and pay $50 and have all the DLC already there. Now, does that make me a bad person? Probably. But it's – guys, if you have beliefs and values as a gamer, stick with them. Because if you don't, you're going to get another Call of Duty 5 and another Call of Duty 6 and Mario Party 77. And it's just – you're going to continue to get screwed by people, and they're not going to listen to you until you speak with your wallet. Your mouth typing and video posts that you do on their websites and forums and angry letters that you give them, they don't give a crap, because you already gave them their money. And they know you're going to buy it anyway, even though you're mad. So the only way for a company to listen is through money. An example I will use is Battlefield 3. Their DLC, quote-unquote, or pre-order stuff was going to be, like, something stupidly exclusive to certain retailers or pre-orders or collector's editions, or I don't remember exactly how they were screwing people, but it was just ridiculous. I canceled my pre-order for Battlefield 3, like, three times. And they slowly started losing pre-order after pre-order, and eventually it came out that they had lost 33,000 pre-orders in a month. And they're like, whoa, okay, we're sorry. We will just include everything in the game. Please don't shoot us. And then the pre-orders doubled. So companies listen. I mean, they really do listen. And it's not because Total Biscuit made a video, or Jesse Cox made a video, or just some other super internet celebrity made a video or got mad or yelled at them. It's because the masses actually said, you're screwing us, we're not going to put up with it, we're out. Boycotts work if people actually participate. Boycotts don't work if you're going to say you're going to participate and then go torrent the damn thing. No, that makes you a douchebag. I would like to torrent this game because I want to play it, but one, honestly, BioWare deserves the money because they put out a wonderful, exceptional game. Their practices and business ethics right now I'm questioning, so I am not going to give them my money right now. They don't deserve it until they either fix it and apologize, or apologize and give a valid reason as to why they lied to people about the DLC. That's it. I mean, again, guys, I'd really love to kind of hear from listeners. I know that our live listeners are kind of small, but if you guys call in and just kind of get a discussion going, that would be great. I would really love to kind of hear your thoughts. 347-838-9713. Call in on any mobile device that has a phone line. That would be great. Kat, I apologize for ranting, but it's just something that just irks me. So, yeah. Kat left, apparently. She's just like, oh, no. is he finally done? Jeez, I can wake up from my nap now.
No, I'm still questioning your motives on actually being married to a woman.
Hey, you've seen pictures. She's real. Okay?
Oh, I thought that was the blow-up doll.
Ha, ha, ha. Funny. Shriggs, don't you say anything either. Because I know you're listening, and it's just, you know. But, so yeah, I just kind of wanted to get that off my chest for ever and just not talk about it anymore. Unless more bullcrap comes out, and I'm like, oh, cool, more rants. But, Kat, what would you like to talk about this week in gaming, and any fun articles that you kind of slipped up, or any weird, creepy games from Germany that you found?
No, actually, I've been really busy playing with my Mass Effect game and trying to get the videos out and everything for that. I do want to put a word out for everybody to that our Valentine's Day contest was extended all through this month. In order to register for that iPod Nano, then you have to go to our website, www.codeboxmedia.com, click on the Valentine's contest, and that'll give you really self-explanatory, very easy instructions. If you can't follow the instructions, then you are not worthy of this reward anyways.
Well, so why is it so hard to give people something for free? I'm just like, wait, what? What? Why? Why is it so hard? Like, we had like four people enter the contest, and we're like, wait, what? Come on! I mean, you're just like, we're giving away a free iPod.
It's very, very difficult, Baz, for somebody to click on like.
I know, apparently.
On Facebook or subscribe on Twitter. I mean, it's really hard for people to do that these days, apparently. So I don't know. I don't know how else we are to get the word across that we are giving away a Nano. And we are extending the contest for another month.
Yeah, guys, it's till the end of March now. And, I want to make sure we get a good number of people in the contest so it's more people have just a more vast chance. And, you know, you guys are going to say that, oh, you're just kind of pimping yourself out for more likes and whatnot. But what's wrong with giving people an extra chance or more chances to win stuff? I mean, it boggles my mind that I don't know. It's just, it's stupid. Like us on Facebook, on YouTube, follow us on Twitter, join our newsletter. It's that simple. If you guys do all three of those, that's three tickets. You guys have three chances to win. I mean, that's like the easiest contest ever. If you don't have a YouTube account and you don't want to make one, I understand. Maybe you have a Twitter. You can just do Twitter and the newsletter. Or if you don't want to do Twitter and YouTube, you can just sign up for the newsletter, make a fake email account, but make sure to check it, and that way we know if you won or not. And we'll announce it on air as well. So I'm just – follow us, and you guys get free stuff. We actually have a couple contests lined up for you throughout the year as well. I mean, it's just – it's an ongoing thing, so do it. It's not hard. It's simple. Anyway, Kat, anything else topic-wise – I know that, you know, like you said, you've been like really, really Mass Effect 3 heavy and just kind of going crazy over it. Anything in the news or gamer world internet's forums related that maybe caught your eye and you were just kind of like, this is crazy?
No, I did when I was doing reading over my massive amounts of press releases and news that come across my desk. Something that did catch my eye, which really is not very big to worry about, but I read that Germany conquered Europe in the gaming market. I mean, we're so used to seeing United States and, you know, UK games that are coming out and everything. Germany is actually, you know, a lot of developers and a lot of new students in the gaming industry are coming out of Germany lately. Mm-hmm. And they're basically making the casual gaming, digital, you know, download games, the free-to-play MMOs. That whole industry is pretty much driving Germany to kind of become a little bit stronger into the marketing competition in the gaming industry. So, I mean, Germany may be a country to look out for in the near future, because they're pretty much trying to get their foot in the door and surpass us in the gaming market. And you never know. I mean, obviously, there's you have Korean games like L2 or Lineage 2, for those who don't know, and Guild Wars 2. They come out of the Korean markets industries, and there's some really good games out of there, and it's in English. I mean, it's mm-hmm. not like you have to read Korean in order to play the game, so you more than likely wouldn't have to be able to read German to play a German game. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's just something I was like, wow, the industry is growing, and it's not just in the United States. It's worldwide now. So that's something to look out for. And I'm actually looking to see what other countries, games other countries can kind of make and compete with each other.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I actually have a piece of news to go over. So.
And now it's time for the news. Stop that.
So, Kat, as you, me, and Shriggs are mainly PC gamers, I have found this wonderful website called PCGamingWitWiki.com. I'm not sure if you've heard about this or have seen it. This was actually brought to my attention through Total Biscuits, one of his videos that he did on one of his sale box videos, where he kind of goes over like the sales of certain Steam games and whatnot. But this website is really cool. It has a bunch of just information, patch notes, mods on there, patches you can download. Like if I click on, let's see, an example. If I click on a really old game like Tribes 1, Stargate Tribes, I click on this, and they have the demo. They have all the patches all the way to Service Pack 1. Downloadable from the links that the host provides. So, huge gaming website. If you're a PC gamer, this is something that I would highly definitely check out. I mean, it has stuff for Half-Life. It has Field of View Command. It has everything that a PC gamer really needs to kind of tweak with everything. So I would definitely check this website out. PCGamingWitWiki.com. Just Google it, and you should be able to find it pretty fairly, but I linked it through our Twitter as well, so if you guys want to go check out our Twitter, that'd be cool too.
Awesome.
What else? I'm trying to think if I should announce this yet or not. I don't think I'm going to until probably next week after we talk about it for a little bit more in depth, which I will catch you after the show about it. I think that it's time for the closing of the show, because I think we're both talked out. What do you say, Kat? Are you ready to go play Mass Effect 3 again?
Get me out of here now.
Yeah, I figured. Well, guys, thanks again for...
Kidding.
Yeah, sure. No, you're not. Thanks again, guys, to Mass Digi for being wonderful guests and just kind of coming on the show and talking to us about what they provide as a game developing college and just their incredibly hands-on learning tactics. It's awesome. Again, if you guys have a idea for a game, go over to massdigi.org and click on the gaming challenge and register for that. If you guys actually have a legit gaming idea and something that is really, really, really neat, email us at boxheads@codeboxmedia.com and we will give you a code to register for free. So if you guys have a really neat game pitch idea, let us know. Maybe we'll get you on the show, just kind of talk about it for something, you know, maybe some publicity for you there. Please follow us on YouTube, /CodeBoxMedia. Facebook is /CodeBoxMedia. Twitter is @CodeBoxMedia. And email to the show is boxheads with an S @codeboxmedia.com. Also, we are starting up the voice box once again. We all took a break from that just due to Mass Effect 3 coming out and just some encoding issues that we had. So send topics for the voice box at voicebox@codeboxmedia.com. Most of our email addresses are pretty straightforward. Email me, Kat, or Shriggs at the respective links. It's just Kat Shriggs or Baz at codeboxmedia.com. Very, very simple there. Please also remember to sign up for a newsletter over at codeboxmedia.com. I'm sure I've said Codebox Media quite a lot already. Kat, any closing statements from you?
Just remember, ladies, heaven is a woman, hell is a woman kicking your ass in PvP. Have
and remember,
nice
guys,
night.
Yes, and also remember that complaining will get you everywhere, apparently. Good night, salutations, and goodbye.